The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
Now, NPHET in its current form as an advisor to government has no further relevance and should be dispatched to a more background role. That's according to my next guest, former Fianna Fáil TD and Minister Dr. Jim McDade, who's practising in Letterkenny in County Donegal. He's written a letter to the Taoiseach and to the Taoiseach to argue that NPHET in its current form has no further relevance and should be dispatched to a more background role. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you've written a letter to the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach. What have you been saying?
Basically, what I was saying on that particular letter was that after the, when I heard it on Sunday night that they were going to do, or that NPHET had actually indicated that we were going to go to level 5, I just kind of lost it. I said, I can't believe this sort of way. And basically, I had been saying it for quite some time as well, that NPHET have got too strong in this situation. What really happened in the policy was at the very, very beginning was that the government would follow the science. Follow the science is what we wanted to do, and I have no problem with that. And also the government had no problem with that, because basically it was somebody to lean on, somebody to blame if you wanted to do it. But unfortunately, Pat, it is in my opinion and in the opinion of quite a number of other people that NPHET have not followed the science, because we have come so far from the last March, and all the figures are indicating that as well. We have come so far, our knowledge of it, and as I said in the letter, we're no longer sending 747s over to China for PPEs. We've got self functioning in that area. We've got our own ventilators. We're not buying ventilators from the rest of Europe. We are so far advanced here, and the facts and the figures are now showing basically that we have another side of this scientific discussion that we should open up, and that is what we're, that is really what I'm saying. If you take a look,
I think NPHET, though, you know they have doctors on NPHET, but also yes. They have statisticians, and Professor Philip Nolan, the president of Maynooth, he does the maths.
I don't know the composition of them, but they appear to be all on the one side of it, and they're coming down with these decisions. What we're asking for is that there be an open debate with people who have got alternate views with the new science that has been produced. I mean, we have gone back to March with regards what has happened. We are no further forward, and the only treatment on the prescription of NPHET has been lockdown, with where, when, and how long it actually will last. And I heard on your station yesterday as well, Professor Nolan, who I have admiration for. I respect the man, but I heard him saying yesterday on the radio when he was asked, you know, well, okay, how long will this last, and what will it achieve? And his response was, well, we'll probably get down to 75 cases, maybe 100 per day, but then over the Christmas period, it'll probably go up back up again, and it'll probably go back up to about 300 or whatever. And how long, he was asked then, would that take? And he said, reluctantly said then, oh, it'll take 6 to 8 weeks, perhaps 3 months. So therefore, the policy of lockdown after lockdown after lockdown, by the very fact that the numbers and the nature of it, surely that's an indication by itself of failed NPHET policy and failed government policy by association.
Now, Jim, we should talk about Donegal, because Donegal was one of the places that saw a massive surge. Can you explain Donegal to me?
Well, yeah, I can explain Donegal. Donegal is a bit different, Pat, because the situation in Donegal is that we had funerals and we had weddings and we had football matches and we had all of the other, if you want to put it, the skullduggery of whatever you want to call it that goes on. But Donegal, in my opinion, it's a personal opinion, that there were two different situations with Donegal. Donegal is the hinterland of Derry, and by the way, Derry is the fourth largest city on this island, believe it or not. Derry is the fourth, it's not given credit for that, but it's the fourth largest by population. I think it's about 98,000 of the population. But they are our hinterland, and there is a huge amount of interconnection between the people of Donegal and the people of Derry. We're over and back. The second thing was, Pat, is that, believe it or not, was summer. Had this occurred in any other time except the summer? I'm not sure. You probably would know what I'm, but I'm not sure how many bank holidays, but I think we have 4 bank holidays, if not 5 bank holidays, during the period of, you know, June, July and August, or perhaps May, June, July and August. We have We have, I think, five bank holidays, and then we have the 12th of July. I never saw so many people. Oh, so many people from Northern Ireland, and they're all welcome at certain times. But I never saw so many, many people in Donegal as there were during this particular summer. They had nowhere else to go, so they came to Donegal.
So this lockdown that we have, unless it's absolutely mirrored in, as you call it, the hinterland of Donegal in Northern Ireland, it's going to continue unless people obey the injunction not to go more than 5 kilometres from their home.
They will obey it. I mean, I was not in favour of going to level 5 because, I mean, as I said, when I already said, lockdown doesn't work, but the very fact that we have sort of lockdown after lockdown means that the policy of lockdown has failed. It has to be tapered with something else. But yes, we are going to go into it. And some Donegal people will do that.
Who should NPHET be talking to? And what measures would you propose?
What I would say, a representative body who have got alternate views. I'm not looking for a confrontation or anything like that. What I wanted to do was that the people who have got opposite views, bringing in what we think is the science that we have learned, and there are quite a number of people, I won't name them now, but quite a number of people have come forward, and those are the type of people that they are scientific people, they are... very reasonable people like Professor Nolan. There's no need for anybody to be
what
scared.
What is the new science? Jim, what is the new science?
Well, the new science is really based on the fact that it is that, I'll just give you an example of it. Every evening we get these numbers that are coming in. There are 1,000 cases, positive cases, so there are 1,400 positive cases and so on. We're getting these numbers, and those numbers should be used for nothing else except for testing, contact tracing. That's where they're useful for. But they're also useful in another aspect, because the whole situation with regard to this particular virus has to be evolved around one word, impact. We give these numbers, let's say we're 1,500 positive cases today. Yesterday, I forget the exact number, but I think it was 1,260-something by yesterday. Yesterday we had two deaths. What is the impact that these numbers are actually having on our society with regard to mortality and with regard to the ICU? With regard to mortality, everybody agrees, we're thankful. Thanks be to God, we're saying that the mortality rate is so low. Yes, there was 13 in one situation. That's another thing. What we're not doing is we are not actually giving the age group
The idea that there are, you know, lies, damned lies, and statistics, and what deaths, and using that as a metric, disguise. Yeah. Are the people who are left badly disabled by this virus, what they call the long haulers, the people who are in ICU, close to death and so on, who manage, through the good work of the frontline people, manage to survive? It doesn't make the virus any easier to cope with if you are hospitalised.
No, I would have to disagree, because the fact of the matter is that we are presented with these figures, but the facts of the matter are that the death toll from respiratory illnesses at this particular time is no different than it was. These have been very mild winters the last two. It's no different than they were at any other time. And the ICU path rate, one stage we had 160 people in April in an ICU. The ICU rate currently stands at between 30 to 34 for the past 17 days. That is not, and the ICU capacity is far greater than that. We had three times that amount, and we had 160 one time in the ICU. So from that point of view, this is a highly contagious virus, but it is not a very virulent virus. And by the way, the other thing is, Pat, is the testing process of the PCR. That there leaves an awful lot to be desired, because really we're getting so many false positives. Some of those positive tests that you are having, what we listen to every evening, could be actually false positives. And
use the tools at your disposal. I mean, if the PCR test is the test that is, if you like, the standard at the moment in every jurisdiction,
to the HSA,
we compare ourselves to other jurisdictions, and we have a rate now that's similar to, if you do the multiplier for a population of 350 million in the United States, we have as many infections every day as they have.
Yes, we have.
And they are seen as a scandal.
What I'm saying is the misinterpretation. By the way, It has been shown on recently that when you ask elderly people, I did this myself because I had a lot of time there. I did this myself. I rang up 21 older people. And when you ask up older people, where are they getting their information from COVID? It is through the media, which is the only way that is open to them now. But they are getting this through the media. And at the same time, an awful lot has been made every evening of, as I'm saying, the number of cases. The number of cases should be equated to what impact that number of cases has on the two main things in our lives in this situation, namely the impact it has on our mortality and the impact it has on our ICU. We are far, far from any crisis. We're lurching, as I say, from crisis to crisis. But I think that the crisis, and I'm going to say this, we're lurching from crisis to crisis, but I think that crisis to crisis is a result of policy and mismanagement rather than actually blaming the population, which you tend to do, for not doing this and for not doing that and for going to fulfillment. We're blaming these people, and rightly so at times, but we are blaming
So Jim, what would you do? You said, maybe careless behaviour rather than bad behaviour at sporting events, at weddings, at communions, at parties and so on, shopping in places without adequate protection, without face masks and so on, all of that. What would you do rather than level five? I mean, what's the alternative demonstrated they don't get it?
I would have left it at level three, and in Donegal's case, I would say at level. We have to get it. I'm not from the far right or the far left or far centre or anything like that, Pat. I am just giving an opinion, and there are people who are far more learned than I am about scientific issues about it. If you take a look at the continent of Africa situation, and you take a look at the models that we're using in Europe, and Professor Nolan is exceptionally good at these areas, far from me to criticise. If you applied the models that's been applied in Europe to the continent of Africa, well, you would have to just clean the blackboard and wipe it clean. But the forecast was for 300,000 deaths, or 300,000 to 3.3 million deaths in the year. Currently, the continent of Africa has, well, the last time I read about it now was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, was 35,000. And you take a look at the continent of Africa, their average age over there is 22. And when you take a look at the age profile of, say, South Africa, it's somewhat older, and therefore it is also related to the fact that they would have more of the deaths in South Africa because of the older age group. But you have all of those type of things there. So that there is a situation. But what I would do would be, as I pointed out to the teacher, is I said it should be more focused. And this is what the group, that the other letter that I signed with my colleagues was, that it should be more focused. And there should be a focused protection. All the billions of euros that we put there, where have they gone? We should have given
it. Is it your view that people who are older should be cocooned as they were back in March?
No, absolutely no. They're not cocooned in the way that they're.
So your plan, Jim, you said to protect some cohorts who are particularly vulnerable. So which cohorts and how?
What I would say there, Pat, is is in the under 35s. The next lockdown that we should exclude, shall we say, the under 35s, the younger cohort, if you want to put it, that we should exclude them, that the lockdown should not apply to these people. They're fit, they're healthy, the figures are showing that they're out and about and everything else, and that all of our resources, the 23 billion or whatever we've already spent on this year, should be focused on people who are vulnerable. We can do that. We can focus our protection. And at the same time, we are to a certain extent building up a certain degree. If the more recent immunity situations are to be followed, the numbers are very small, but they are something that you have to take on board as well. And by the way, what we're actually doing at the minute, what is happening, nature is actually working for us at the minute. Nature is on its way, because nature has given us 1,400, whatever the numbers were, on a daily basis, and we have so many thousands now. So nature is actually giving us infecting these younger people, in which 97 or 98% of them actually don't have any problems at all. And by the way,
they simply spread it, Jim.
Yeah,
they may be asymptomatic, and they spread it.
So you want all the 35s
out there to cross-infect each other.
No,
that's fine. If they don't die, that's fine.
No,
but then they bring it home.
One of the points I said then, how am I going to fix this here if they bring it home? Yes, I know that question would be asked. So those are the questions that should be out there, Pat. And by the way, I don't think that that is a decision. The longer-term treatment for this condition is not a situation which can be determined by NPHET. It is not a decision that can be determined by the government. I think eventually, when people get tired of what you and I are talking about, I think this is going to be eventually go down to the people. That the people are going to have to make a decision as to how we're going to actually deal with this, and should be discussed over a period of a year or two where we're still waiting on vaccines and possibility that we may never get one.
Hmm. The vaccine they're talking about, a vaccine possibly for the vulnerable populations as early as March or April of next year. You would be hesitant about taking a brand new vaccine?
Yes, I personally am. I'm not, as I say, from any...
You're not an anti-vaxxer.
...anything about vaccines or anything like that there. But with regard to this particular vaccine, I am the age that I am. And I liken the vaccine to the 100-metre sprint at the Olympic Games. The winner gets the gold medal, the fastest man or the fastest woman in the world. The winner who gets to the line here, and by the way, it is a dash, the winner who gets to the line here first, is the gold medal is billions and billions and billions of whatever currency that they want, literally. So I'm just saying that I have two problems with it. First of all, that normally a vaccine normally takes about 7 years, 7 to 10 years. The second thing is, I just think that, and I think there were some figures already given on this, I think it will be difficult. It may have difficulty. The uptake may be different. Now, I am not saying don't take it by any means. It is a European advised vaccine, you know, where the European Union has advised that this is safe. It's just in my old grey cells, perhaps, is that the situation remains that I just have concerns regarding a vaccine that is made within 7 months instead of 7 years.
Jim McDade, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Pat.